Tune in Monday through Friday at 3:30 and 1705 UTC on The Voice of America.
Headquarters here in Washington. I am Shaka Sali, and today we are discussing the connections that education creates between the United States and Africa. Education is in high demand in both the United States and Africa. It is one of the sustainable development goals set by the United Nations and supported by the international community. My colleague Zoe Liudaki has more on this story.
Education transforms the way we relate to the world around us. It helps people acquire new skills and knowledge, and it becomes an engine that fuels social and economic mobility. Distance Education Africa is a non-profit organization based in the United States and Kenya that uses online training for students or professionals on the continent. It collaborates with the University of Virginia and provides scholarships to students in more than 39 countries across Africa. Since 2016, it has awarded 6,000 scholarships. Distant Education Africa focuses on business and management courses and certificates to further expand the career opportunities of its students. Another effort from a diaspora organization strives to create satellite campuses of historically black colleges and universities in Africa. It is called HBCU Africa Homecoming Initiative. The chairman of the program explains its goals.
The HBCU Africa Homecoming Initiative is actually a one-stop platform endorsed by the African Union to facilitate educational and economic opportunity exchange between HBCUs, African institutions, and the African Union.
Morgan State University, a historically black research university in Baltimore, Maryland, in the United States, is leading the way and is set to initiate degree programs in Ghana later this year. In addition to skill building and learning, education can also highlight a path of self-reflection and discovery. Traveling and getting to know another culture can dispel myths about Americans and Africans. Tennessee State University has its own heritage programs.
I'm an African American, and I realized that because of the generation that I was raised in, I wasn't necessarily told the truth about my history. A lot of things that I found out since starting, unfortunately, the Office of International Affairs, I didn't even know. We were just not given the truth about who we were as a people. And the first time I traveled to the continent and engaged in one of the elders there, it was tear-jerking for me. I just teared up and started crying when the young lady grabbed my hand and said, "Welcome home, my daughter." It literally felt like something was going through my body.
The same ground.
Birthright Africa was established 10 years ago to connect African Americans with Africa and teach them about their heritage.
I came to America as a young child, going on 11. I had had some exposure to the continent growing up as a young child, but had had westernized education. And initially, does it really matter? We don't really know that that matters. But as I got older and came of age, I was working in the finance industry and learned about a group called Birthright Israel. And it made me stop in my tracks and say, why isn't this happening for people of African descent?
Howard University in Washington, D.C. has a large population of Nigerian and Ghanaian students on campus.
At HBCUs, we have a very rich concentration on Black history, Black culture across countries and across cultures. And they want to connect the content of their classroom instruction with the actual lived experience of people across the continent.
Many American universities provide opportunities for students to take a year abroad, as it is called, to travel and learn in a different country. The underlying belief is that traveling provides a different type of education that opens one's mind to different possibilities while building cross-cultural tolerance and understanding. Zoe Udaki, VOA News, Washington.
Thanks, Zoe, for that report. Joining us here in Washington are three distinguished guests. Wala El-Sheikh, co-founder and CEO of Birthright Africa. Siddiqui Traoré, president and founder of Distance Education for Africa. And Ernest Obobisa, vice president of the Ghana chapter of the American Field Service. And in New York, we are joined by Kareem Williams, a Birthright Africa alumnus. Well, I have to say, ladies and gentlemen, that I'm profoundly honored and exceedingly humbled to have the opportunity to host the four of you on Straight Talk Africa, the three of you on Straight Talk Africa, for the first time, as a matter of fact.
Thank you. Thank you for having us.
Thank you very much.
You're most welcome. Mm-hmm. Yeah, let me come to you immediately, Wala.
Yes.
What exactly is Birthright Africa?
Birthright Africa is a nonprofit, but we are a movement. Essentially, we are committed that every youth and young adult of African descent, ages 13 to 30, gets a free trip, free educational trip to Africa as a culminating experience to learn their cultural roots and their legacy of innovation, to understand that resilience and brilliance, both historically, present day, and the future of who we are as a people. And so we provide that sense of pride and confidence in knowing who you are, to know where you're going, and to know that that it's full of possibilities.
So anybody in the age bracket that you mentioned, if they are or claim to be part of the African descent, they automatically qualify?
Yes, as U.S. citizens. So we do have folks register with us as U.S. citizens, ages 13 to 30. Any African descent could be African American, Afro-Caribbean, Afro-Latinx. And once they register with us, we funnel them to apply with one of our education partners, who creates a Birthright program for them to be able to explore their culture and history, starting in the U.S. and culminating in the continent.
And you are very generous. Of course, you sponsor the trip and room and board while they are on the continent.
Yes. So 50% of it right now is sponsored by Birthright Africa and the other 50% by our education partners. So it is absolutely free, food, accommodations, flight. Because one of the biggest barriers for traveling for young people is the finances. The study abroad statistics for students of African descent is quite low. Only 6% right now do a study abroad. And of those that do go to a study abroad, only 4% are going to Africa. So there's a huge gap that we are looking to fulfill because travel is essentially the best education.
And what is the reaction so far on both sides of the aisle? I'm talking about the American students who go to Africa and their hosts on the continent.
Sure. I know we're going to be talking to Kareem, but from what I have seen, there is a sense of pride and confidence and a connection that is surprising oftentimes. The feeling of a home outside of America that you never knew really existed, and just knowing that there's this greatness in our history that we weren't taught about. And on the African side, they're always excited to see us coming, welcoming us as brothers and sisters, and knowing that we're looking to engage for the future in trade and tourism And some of our alumnus even have interest in living and working on the continent. So there's a lot of connection being made and bridging of the gap, which we're really excited to be a part about.
Very interesting. And what about you, Sidiq Traore?
Well, thank you very much for having me today.
You're most welcome.
I am so excited to be on your show because I'm going to talk about distance education for Africa and, you know, to share the incredible success stories we've been doing all over the African continent. Distance Education for Africa is an educational organization based in Nairobi, Kenya.
Mm-hmm.
Our mission, we have three major missions. One, to promote ICT in Africa.
Mm-hmm.
Two, to contribute significantly to the reducing of poverty. And three, to offer world-class training courses to students and professional base in Africa, including marginalized area.
Is it true that your headquarters are based on Koinange Street, downtown Nairobi?
Yes, you know, we were in Koinange Street, but, you know, we left there because, you know, they changed the office, yeah. So we were based, yeah, the headquarters is based in Nairobi.
That means we used to be neighbors as an institution because the Voice of America Bureau for East Africa used to be based on Koinange Street in Chester House.
Oh, yes, yes. We are neighbors. Yeah, yeah, we moved. So, yes, we still you know, because we are virtual, so it's not really, you know, to have an office is not always the best option for people who are virtual.
Now, when you talk about virtual, talk to me in a language that is accessible to an ordinary English-speaking member of the audience. What does virtual exactly mean?
Well, virtual means, you know, physically, you know, what we do, we offer courses online. So people receive, you know, courses in Africa, and the course comes from the U.S., from the University of it. That's really what, you know, we do like a virtual learning, you know, online learning. That's what I'm going to talk about today, about what we've done in terms of online. I'm going to talk about the scholarship program, which I want to offer everyone in Africa. Africa Scholarship Project is a collaboration between the University of Virginia, the Darden Business School, and DA Africa. So we offer courses to people who are based in Africa. The Africa Scholarship Project has two main objectives. The main objective is to associate the learners in Africa with an innovative educational initiative by bringing top-tier universities in Africa via modern technologies and platforms. Those are the main objective, but we have specific objectives. The specific objectives are, one, to offer free online courses to a cohort of Africans so they don't pay.
Online courses.
It's 100% online.
How do you deal with the apparent digital divide?
Well, the beginning was tough, I must say, but things are moving now in Africa. When we started distance education for Africa, the internet connection was really terrible in some countries. I remember we offer a computer science course from Laval University, and in University of Bangui, for instance, we have 10 students following the course on one computer.
Mm-hmm.
So it was terrible at that time. But since things have moved, the technology has moved, the platforms have moved.
Mm.
So the way we deal with the technology is we use tablets, we use computers, we use cell phone. So cell phone has come handy to solve the digital divide. So the specific objective to offer online courses, whoever wants to enroll, is open enrollment. They don't pay anything. Two, we want to expand access to education in Africa. You know, access to higher education is very difficult
in
Africa.
It's very limited.
So it's very limited.
So how is the reaction so far?
Well, the reaction so far, we started with only 117 students in 7 countries in Africa. Today, I'm proud to say that we have 48 countries. We have over 6,000 scholarships. And the
6,000
scholarships in 48 countries. So
but
we are missing.
You are talking about the continent. 6,000 scholarships really is.
Well, it's a start. Mm. It's a start because the problem people don't know about our program. So here we are here today to inform the community that these are available there. So what has been the impact? We started with a business strategy from the University of Darden. Mm. When
University of Darden?
The Darden Business School.
Where is that?
It's at the University of Virginia.
I see.
Yeah, so first of all, I want to thank the University of Virginia for offering all these scholarships to students in Africa. When we started 4 years ago, we selected only few people in 7 countries. Mm-hmm. And the way we selected it, we wanted to create a network of African leaders, of African students who would be trained to become African leaders and create jobs and reduce poverty. That was one of our objectives. So we carefully selected students. We have 3 types of target population. One, we selected poor undergrad underprivileged students.
Poor?
Well, from universities, because universities are poor, they don't have money.
But so, when you say poor and underprivileged students in Africa, what exactly do you mean?
Well, I mean students who don't have money, you know, to really start a business.
So
they are in school, mm. but they don't have money to start, or mm. when they finish, they don't have money. So we wanted to select students who are underprivileged, and, you know, in Africa, in universities, they don't have any business background. They have no business background. So that was the first target population. The second mm. target population was business people who want to make a difference into their community.
I see.
By helping them to unleash their potential business by creating jobs and also help their community to see what their purpose in life is. And the third target was we have CEOs and entrepreneurs in our courses. So to answer your question, what was the result? When we offer the courses after 1 year, students told us our courses have provided them with essential business courses that are market relevant, enhancing their problem-solving skills, job readiness, mm-hmm. and employability. Furthermore, students told us that they have started applying what they have learned from the business school, and they saw immediate response.
I see.
One good example is we offer design thinking. Design thinking, as you know, is a problem-solving course. It's a human-centric problem. Mm. When we finished that course, a young man in Malawi called Dominic Tembo, used a tool called visualization on a struggling company in Malawi to help them to stay afloat.
Very interesting.
That was one of the best success stories we have. So we have so many success stories, you know.
We'll come to that later. Mm-hmm. I know that, Ernest, you are almost itching also to come on board. You have landed. You are on the radar.
So, I'm here to talk more about my experience here in America and also as being a volunteer for an organization that does more of like intercultural exchange program.
Yes.
And back home in Ghana, I am the volunteer. I'm part of the volunteer that we help students that come from diaspora and also other countries, AFS countries, to Ghana.
Talk to us about AFS, which happens to be American Field Service.
So AFS Intercultural Exchange. It was an AFS when the First World War started. So the AFS was standing as like a Red Cross.
Mm-hmm.
Then they find out that they would like to kind of like make an exchange program so that other countries will understand other countries' culture to bring peace. If I understand your culture and you also understand my culture, there's not going to be any war. So that was where AFS started. That was when the program started. But I'm not in a position to talk much because I'm a volunteer and I would like to share my experience with them.
Were you a beneficiary of AFC?
Yeah, AFS of AFS Intercultural Exchange has kind of like helped me to travel the world, to know more about other countries' cultures, to understand how people, other countries' cultures are through intercultural learning. And it has helped my career as a freelance photographer back home, traveling to other countries, telling stories with my lens in other countries, and also kind of like build me out to kind of like live with other other participants that come on the program to Ghana for me to share my culture with them, also learn from them as well.
That is very interesting because the way I understood the American field service type of opportunities when I was in primary school in Uganda in the 1960s is that they would identify students who are in second year of secondary school, which you would call 10th grade.
Yeah.
And they would virtually provide a scholarship, but the family would also make some contribution.
So, yeah.
And
so
I remember the first member of Kavari, the neighborhood where I grew up, Kavari Town, the first member I remember who benefited from that program was a man called Bill Matama. He was an incredible goalkeeper at a school called Senior, which was one of my alma maters, Shigezi College Butoveri. He unfortunately has since died. May his soul rest in eternal peace. And he had a brother called Kaka Matama, who is a Kavari businessman and used to be a mayor for Kavari for many, many years, and someone that I would call a family friend. And the reason I admired Bill was the manner in which, when he came back, was able to speak American English.
Yes.
He basically reminded me of some of the cinemas, movies that I watched, looking at cowboys like John Wayne, Clint Eastwood, you know, that type of person. And I felt like I wanted to be like Bill Matama so that I could speak American English.
Yeah.
There was another guy by the name Jeffrey Sabit Kabushenga, who was also from the same school. And he has a son who currently happens to be the chief executive officer of New Vision Media Corporation, a state parastatal corporation in Uganda, which owns televisions, stations, radios, and newspapers, you know, that kind of stuff. And then there was another young man, was called Kanahe Biryabaho, son of Shungura, who was a neighbor, and also a sub-county chief. And I remember those three specific individuals, and I said, God, how could I possibly be like these guys? And when I finally came to the United States many, many years later, in a different context and for different reasons, I remember walking downtown New York in Manhattan.
Yeah.
I actually found the headquarters of the AFS near the United Nations.
Yeah.
It's very interesting.
Yeah, it's true. So here in the US, we have AFS International that operates globally, and we have AFS USA. So every country, all the 53 countries that AFS operate, have office there. So in Africa, we have four AFS countries: Ghana, Kenya, Egypt, South Africa, and Tunisia. So and I belong to a chapter in Ghana, Accra chapter, and I am the vice president for my chapter. So what we do in our chapter is kind of like we would like to find host families for student participants that will come on the program, try to be find volunteers who will be contact person to them and others as well.
Very interesting. Yeah. Let me go to Karim. Good afternoon, Karim.
Hi, how are you? I'm fine.
I am hugely terrific. Are you terrific?
Sorry, say that one more time.
I was wondering whether you are equally terrific. I said I was hugely terrific, and I was wondering whether you are either terrific or awesome, feeling awesome.
I'm terrific.
Well,
I think that's a better word.
At least I had to put a smile on your face, Karim. You have to give me credit for that. Now, tell me, where exactly in Africa did you go?
I went to Ghana.
In Ghana, where specifically? Are you talking about Accra?
Oh, we were in Accra, and then we also went to Kumasi.
You went to Kumasi, to the Ashanti land. How long were you there?
Say, we were there for 12 days.
For 12 days. And what was your experience like?
It's a lot to describe, I'd say, but to really sum it up, it was an experience of enlightenment. Mm-hmm. Like, I really got in touch with my ancestry for, I'd say, the first time. And when I touched down on the land, it felt like home, because I have a Jamaican background.
Yes.
And when I touched down on the land and just traveling throughout, it really felt like different parts of Jamaica that I've seen. So it was a very familiar feeling when I touched down, I'd say.
Any particular reason why, for example, you did not go to the Cape Coast, really? You did? Cape Coast?
Yeah, we went to Cape Coast too. We went to the Almina Castle.
Oh, I see.
Almina Castle.
Yeah, definitely.
Slash dungeon.
Very interesting. Mm-hmm. Now,
that was a powerful experience.
I don't know whether you followed the conversation that I had with Ernest earlier. People who used to be to benefit from this intercultural exchange programs through the American Field Service, they would come back to Africa armed with an American accented English. And some of us would like it so much, would like to go and be part of that experience. And of course, there are others who would wonder why someone is speaking like that. What about in your particular case or your group? Did you pick up some accent from Ghana so that when you came back to New York,
that's funny,
you could actually speak with a very beautiful, romantic, proud, African-accented English?
That's funny. I'd say for maybe the first few weeks after I came back, I still had some sort of accent. But when I was in Ghana, I definitely caught the accent. But when I came back, that's when I really like started to readjust back into the American accent. But when I was there, I felt more connected because I come from a Jamaican, like I said, I come from a Jamaican background, and that's my first tongue. So being in Ghana really was similar to that patois tongue. So that gave me a chance to express myself in that way.
Very interesting. What about the music?
Oh, the music? So yes. The music was cool. I already liked Afrobeat in general.
Uh-huh.
But when I was there, I noticed there was a large amount of reggae and dancehall music being played. So that felt homely.
Did you feel like perhaps you should have had more time to be there?
I definitely wish I had more time to be there. It was a great experience, like especially just the community aspect of it. I felt at home. I felt like I was embraced. I didn't feel a lot of resistance, and that's something that I really cherish, just being in a space where I can feel safe to be myself.
What are some of the challenges that you think you went through that you would love to share with us?
some of the challenges I went through when I was there?
Yes, please.
Okay, so I'd say just general culture shock, because in America, in New York in particular, people aren't necessarily as friendly and as open to helping. Mm-hmm. So there were certain situations where I wasn't really sure if somebody was genuinely...